Wow, what an action-packed first hour, and we've got more. Linda Moulton Howe with us. She's got some incredible stories, and we'll get right into them in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast, and as she appears every month on Coast to Coast, Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, I can't believe we're going into August. My
no.
Gosh.
We thought last year was fast, but I think it's the fastest yet, and everybody I know feels the same way. And it also makes you take stock of where we are in the United States today versus where we were back in the 70s.
Oh, my gosh.
And remember the Watergate break-in 43 years
ago
in June 1972 that led to the resignation of President Nixon?
That was an incredible story, a story that just got deeper and deeper. It festered and got just worse and worse and worse until Nixon had to call it quits.
That's right. I still remember everybody glued to television sets and remember that the man who organized that break-in was E. Howard Hunt from the CIA.
Exactly.
Hunt took to his grave in January 2007 a lot of secrets from the Bay of Pigs.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And the Kennedy assassination. Everett Howard Hunt. In 1949, was hired by then the newly created Central Intelligence Agency under Truman on September 18, 1947. Hunt's specialty was political warfare, dirty tricks, sabotage, and propaganda, including the overthrow of Guatemala's government in the early 1950s and the disastrous Bay of Pigs invasion to bring down Cuba's Castro in April 1961. 9 years later, in 1970, CIA super spy Hunt was frustrated and resigned his Langley CIA position and went to work for Robert R. Mullen Company, a public relations subsidiary of General Foods. And this was a front, George, for the CIA. There, Hunt met attorney Douglas Caddy, and the two men became friends. Caddy insists that at the time he did not know that the PR firm and Howard Hunt were both working for the CIA. Then Hunt was assigned in his CIA Mullen work to head up a political dirty tricks unit for the Nixon White House. That is how E. Howard Hunt came to organize the burglary of the Democratic National Committee that took place at the Watergate complex in Washington, D.C., on June 17, 1972, at about 3 o'clock in the morning. Hunt's five henchmen were discovered and arrested by police. Hunt reached out to attorney Caddy for help. Caddy was not a criminal law attorney, but found one to represent those five burglars. Hunt's bungled DNC break-in eventually brought down Richard M. Nixon, who resigned as president 2 years later on August 9, 1974. Hunt was convicted for masterminding the burglary, conspiracy, and wiretapping of the DNC and was sentenced to 33 months in the federal prison camp at Eglin Air Force Base, Florida. Not long before E. Howard Hunt entered the prison on April 25, 1975, Hunt asked to meet for the last time with Douglas Caddy at the Yenching Palace Restaurant in Washington, famous for historic deal-making. And Caddy wanted to know the true reasons behind the Watergate burglary and JFK's assassination from his old friend. What happened in that last dinner is the subject of my first two Coast segments tonight. Douglas Caddy only recently, in June 2015, watched a documentary called Agent Oswald, the CIA Patsy, produced and edited by Daniel List, host and producer of the Internet's Dark Journalist. It was Douglas Caddy who contacted Daniel List to say that the Oswald documentary was, quote, correct, close quote. Daniel List asked Caddy if he would be willing to talk about his own experiences with the Watergate break-in and his friendship with Howard Hunt. Caddy agreed and gave his permission for a Skype videotaped interview 1 month ago on June 29th, 2015 from his Houston, Texas apartment. Daniel sent the three-hour videotaped interview to me at my news website, earthfiles.com, for review. Caddy's last discussion with E. Howard Hunt provides a surprising explanation for the DNC break-in and adds more weight to whistleblower leaks of the last 52 years that the CIA killed President John F. Kennedy because JFK wanted to open up the truth about extraterrestrials on Earth and share those facts with the Soviet Union in an effort to end the Cold War. I asked Daniel List if we could collaborate for tonight's Earth Files and Coast to Coast AM broadcast, and he agreed. Here now, from Cambridge, Massachusetts, is Daniel List, followed by retired attorney Douglas Caddy from Houston, Texas.
I was contacted by Douglas Caddy, who was a former attorney for the Watergate burglars and a close friend of CIA super spy E. Howard Hunt. And Hunt had long been suspected of being involved in the JFK assassination. And then Caddy contacted me and said he was ready to go public about what his good friend E. Howard Hunt had told him about the reasons why JFK had been assassinated.
This was at the infamous Chinese restaurant in Washington, D.C., where historic figures went to talk and to plot and to plan.
That's exactly right. The year was 1975. This restaurant was famous for major events happening. For example, the Cuban Missile Crisis was resolved through secret channels there. And the government often buds where these major figures from the State Department and the administrations would sit down and talk business. Henry Kissinger was a frequent guest there. Hunt had actually contacted Caddy and said that he wanted to meet him before Hunt went to prison as a way to say thanks for all that Caddy had done for him. Because after all, Hunt had put him in a very uncomfortable position, having Caddy represent the Watergate burglars without giving him the full story behind what they were doing there.
So Hunt is initiating the dinner, asking to come so he can say thank you to Douglas Caddy, the attorney, for the help that he had given Howard Hunt at the time of the Watergate break-in, and that Hunt is headed off to prison.
Exactly right. And what's happening is Caddy has a deep desire to find out, one, what was behind the Watergate break-in, and two, what was the reason John F. Kennedy was assassinated.
Here now is 77-year-old retired attorney Douglas Caddy from his home in Houston, Texas, on June 29th, 2015.
Somewhere into the mail, I said, well, Howard, I've got to ask you some questions, you know. The first one is, why did you go into the Democratic National Committee? What was so important there? And he hesitated, then he said, well, we went in there just to photograph any documents that had numbers on it. I said, Howard, come on now, please. I mean, you can't get away with that. That's just too easy an answer, you know? I mean, look what I've gone through on your behalf. He just shrugged his shoulders. And I said, well, you did plead guilty to burglary and to conspiracy and to eavesdropping. I was a witness at that first trial. I remember looking out at that table in front of me and seeing all that wiretap equipment and photograph equipment and so forth. And so, Howard, isn't it true then that you went in there to replace a defective bug? I was asking for him confirmation, but all he did was nod his head like that. He didn't verbally articulate. So that was his method of assenting to what I had asked. And I said, well, there was a lot of publicity about a prostitution ring being operated out of the Democratic National Committee. And so did you not also go in there to get copies of the books that contain the names of the clients of the prostitution ring there? Obviously, this is how you compromise people. If you can get the names of the clients, you can compromise them and force them through blackmail to do things. And he once again nodded assenting, I thought. And I said, well, Howard, this is not enough of a reason to burglarize the Democratic National Committee. There's got to be another reason why you went in there. He hesitated for a moment and said, yes, well, there was another reason. We believe there were Cuban government reports in the Democratic National Committee that were connected to the Kennedy assassination. And I said, wow, Cuban government reports that would give us information about the Kennedy assassination. He said, yes. And I said, well, what do you believe were in those reports? At that point, he just held up his hands, went like that, and said, "No more questions." I thought, well, this is the last time I see Howard. I'm going to make one more stab, seeing if I can get something here, you know. And I said, well, Howard, why was John Kennedy assassinated? He said, John Kennedy was assassinated because he was about to give our most vital secret to the Soviets. And I was stunned by that. And I said, well, what was that? At that point, he leaned forward and looked right in my eyes, and he said, the alien presence. And he reached out and shook my hand, and then turned and walked away. And that was the last time I saw Howard Hunt, the alien presence. I remembered it. I knew it was important. I came across, in my own investigation, Stanton Friedman. As a researcher, he said that he went to the Harvard University Library because he wanted to look up Dr. Donald Menzel. Dr. Menzel was head of the observatory at Harvard, and he was an astronomer. The reason Stanton Friedman was interested in him was because for years, Menzel was the number one public critic of UFOs and aliens and all that subject, you know.
Menzel was like the big UFO debunker of the 50s and 60s.
Because of his position at Harvard, he had the credibility and people believed him. And so Stanton Friedman was going through the file on Menzel, and he came across this file within the file on JFK, and he said, wow. And he opened it, and it was a letter from Dr. Menzel to JFK. John Kennedy, who was in 1957 on the Board of Overseers of Harvard University. JFK was already a senator at that time, but senators do not have the highest classification of security. And so Dr. Menzel said, when you get that pending security granted, there are things I want to talk to you about my work with the NSA, I gather with aliens and UFOs and so forth. This may have been the first time that John Kennedy came in contact with someone who had detailed knowledge of the alien presence. And so when Kennedy became president, one of his agendas was to get more knowledge about the alien presence. The interesting thing about Dr. Menzel was that he was a member of Majestic 12. John Kennedy, briefed by Dr. Menzel, he wanted more information. The first thing he did was in June of 1961, he issued National Security Action Memorandum 55, in which he directed that the Defense Department take oversight of the covert activities of the CIA. He thought this would give him an insight into the research project of Majestic 12. President Kennedy appointed Dr. Hugh Dryden, who was an assistant minister of NASA, to coordinate activity with his counterpart in the Soviet Union on the subject of exploration of outer space and landing on the moon. Kennedy went ahead with his speech at American University in June 1963. Remember, he was assassinated in November, in which he advocated world peace. Then in September of 1963, he spoke before the United Nations, at which time he said the exploration of outer space is not a matter just for one nation, it's a matter for international cooperation, and I would propose that the two great powers, the Soviet Union and the United States, engage jointly in outer space and a landing on the moon. And his final step before he was assassinated was he issued a National Security Action Memorandum number 271, which I have in front of me here, dated November 12, 1963, for the Administrator of National Aeronautic and Space Administration, subject cooperation with the USSR on outer space matters. The important point here is that Kennedy sends this memorandum to the following persons: Chairman of the National Aeronautics and Space Council, Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, Director of the Central Intelligence Agency, Chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission, Special Assistant to the President for Science and Technology, Director of Bureau of the Budget, Director of U.S. Information Agency, copy to Mr. Bundy, Mr. Johnson, and the National Security Council files. So he formally proposed this as a policy. You're General Curtis LeMay. How would you react if you were General Curtis LeMay?
A guy like LeMay was so used to fighting the Soviet Union, I can only imagine that they were just completely furious on the inside of the national security structure.
Absolutely furious. He would want to nuke the Soviets. And there are all these people who had that attitude. And so Kennedy essentially was on his own to a great extent. He had his brother, but he was on his own. He had also made other enemies, we have to realize, through other proposals like the Federal Reserve and on the Bay of Pigs. Pigs was very, very important because the Cuban-American community blamed him for the Bay of Pigs debacle. So he did have other enemies. But in my opinion, what he was doing, starting with his first Action Memorandum 55, where he asked the Defense Department to have oversight over the covert activities of the CIA, this was in June of 1961, He was challenging the authority of the successor to Majestic 12. This is a government above the government. Even President Clinton at one point publicly stated that he had come to believe that there was a government above his over which he had no control. So what Kennedy was doing was challenging this group. This is the group that has the authority to deal with the alien presence, whatever it is. We do not know who at this time administers this organization. Now, Kennedy, in my opinion, because we pose a threat to them by saying, I as president want this information. I'm the elected representative of the American people. I feel that I should have this information about the alien presence. This should not be just in the province of this secret group. And so, in my opinion, behind his assassination ultimately was his attempt to have authority to get into Majestic 12's oversight of the alien presence.
Wow, Linda, incredible.
It is, and in the next half hour, you're going to have a completely new insight into Richard M. Nixon being exposed to the alien presence, and just like JFK, wanting to try to get some sort of a leverage into this stone-walled Majestic 12 that was a group appointed by Truman, and that these presidents, Kennedy and Nixon and after, they could not penetrate. And I will have some very sobering information in the second half hour, but I want to go into something. I discovered a lot of things while I was preparing the Earth Files reports, which I would urge a lot of people to go to earthfiles.com so you can see some of the photos and the documents and the letters that complement this very important interview between Daniel List and Douglas Caddy. And one of the discoveries was that JFK was assassinated November 22nd, 1963. And you go back only 10 days in time to November 12th, 1963, and there is a top secret memo to the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, who at the time then was John McCone, before in 1961, up for quite a while, had been Alan W. Dulles, with those initials AWD that come in on some other important documents. But what this particular document says as its subject, and listen to this, this is Kennedy writing this to the director of the Central Intelligence Agency only 10 days before he is shot in his head and body. Quote, classification review of all UFO intelligence files affecting national security. This is the subject line in this memo from John F. Kennedy to the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. And when you get into the body of this memorandum, it says that JFK had instructed James Webb, the same one that is now the name on this incredible new telescope that is going to be up in the skies. JFK wrote that he had instructed James Webb to develop a program with the Soviet Union in joint space and lunar exploration. It would be very helpful if you would have the high threat cases. This is UFOs now. High threat cases reviewed with the purpose of identification of bona fide as opposed to classified CIA and UFO sources. It is important that we make a clear distinction between the knowns and unknowns in the event that the Soviets try to mistake our extended cooperation as a cover for intelligence gathering of their defense and space programs. I mean, this is a whole new view.
Oh my gosh, Linda, it's unbelievable. We're coming back with more of the story next. Welcome back to Coast, Linda Moulton Howe. Incredible story about E. Howard Hunt, Linda. Just absolutely incredible.
It is, and 7 years ago, in August 2008, I did not know that by 2015, and historic Watergate break-in figures such as attorney Douglas Caddy would share his last conversation with the CIA's E. Howard Hunt when Hunt said that JFK was assassinated because he was trying to penetrate the MJ-12 and CIA control over information about the, quote, alien presence, close quote. But in August 2008, I was discussing that exact same subject, the assassination of President John F. Kennedy by the CIA, with Robert Wood, PhD, retired aerospace engineer, who had purchased all of the top secret MJ-12 documents that a whistleblower named Timothy Cooper sold to Bob in 2001. Cooper said his father had worked in a print shop that did work for the White Sands Proving Ground in New Mexico back in the 40s and had secretly copied documents about UFOs and extraterrestrials that contained titles and stamps of Majestic 12, MJ-12, and Magic. Now, a week after Bob Wood purchased all of these Cooper documents in 2001, Tim Cooper called Dr. Wood and said, "You won't believe what arrived in the mail yesterday." And this is after Bob had left. It was a new memo that Tim Cooper had never seen before and appeared to be scorched as if by fire. During our 2008 Earth Files interview, Bob Wood told me, quote, "As far as I know, this burned memo, which he had been examining by then, is the only document that I've ever heard anyone claim could be the authorization to kill John F. Kennedy," close quote. And the whistleblower of the 9-page burned memo says that he worked 1960 to 1974 in CIA counterintelligence for James Jesus Angleton, director, CIA counterintelligence. After James Angleton died on May 12, 1987, the whistleblower said he pulled this 9-page memorandum from a fire that had scorched Angleton's most sensitive MJ-12 secret files, and there were two handwritten notations on the top burn memo page, quote, "Original carbon," and all caps, "Do not remove from safe," signed, first words illegible, but JJA is very clear, all caps, and that would be Angleton, James Jesus Angleton. Now, the 9-page memo is not dated, but it is stamped in red, top secret MJ-12 at the top, and the subject is Lancer, all caps. That was the Secret Service code name for John F. Kennedy when he was president. His wife was Lace. There's a black stamp on this memo that has a CI on the upper left. That's counterintelligence. That is James Jesus Angleton again. The next lines are Central Intelligence Agency from Director of Central Intelligence, MJ-1, going into Projects Majestic and Jehovah. Now, up to 1961, Alan Dulles was the director of the CIA and presumably MJ-1 in the powerful Majestic 12 group. He was a tough inside player, but in November 1961, President John F. Kennedy replaced Alan Dulles with John McCone. McCone was also in charge of the CIA at the time of the November 22, 1963 assassination. But it is a hypothesis that Alan Dulles continued, in spite of these changes, in the powerful MJ-1 position on Majestic 12 group, and it could have been Dulles who was writing communication in this burn memo, which says, in part, "As you must know, Lancer has made some inquiries regarding our activities, which we cannot allow. Please submit your views no later than October," was that 1963, a month before the assassination? "Your action to this matter is critical to the continuance of the group," close quote. There is much more about the 9-page Byrne memo at my news website, earthfiles.com. But now, with this added whistleblower context, to consider Douglas Caddy's conversation with E. Howard Hunt, let's continue on in part two of the Douglas Caddy interview with dark journalist Daniel List.
The planning of the assassination was done very, very carefully. The planning of the cover-up was done very, very carefully. If I had to say who I thought was the ultimate planner, I would say James Angleton of the CIA.
James Jesus Angleton, who was chief of the Central Intelligence Agency's counterintelligence program at that time.
JFK's cabinet was en route to Japan when the assassination took place.
They all just happened to be sent out of the country during the assassination.
Just the Secretary of State and the Attorney General were in Washington. Whoever had planned it so the cabinet were en route to Japan to conduct negotiations.
Angleton is a very likely candidate for that type of planning. Is there another high-level figure that comes to mind?
I think that Lyndon Johnson, from the time he became vice president, he planned to become president. There is this quotation from Bobby Baker, who was his right-hand man, to one of LBJ's assistants at the inauguration, to the effect that JFK would not live out his term as president. But what happened was, I think that Lyndon Johnson had knowledge of the assassination, but he was not the central figure controlling the operation of it. He had prior knowledge.
So Hunt tells you, his good friend, the real reason why JFK was assassinated, which was he was going to share our knowledge of the alien presence with the Soviet Union.
Our most vital secret.
Later, he did make a deathbed confession about LBJ working with elements of the CIA to assassinate President Kennedy. How did you feel about your old friend's deathbed confession?
I agreed with him on LBJ, but looking back, Howard said in interviews with the press, and he wrote an article for the New York Times while he was in prison, and he says, "I'm still serving my country." He says, "I'm in prison, but I'm still serving my country." And I think what Howard Hunt was saying at his deathbed confession is he would still serve his country by withholding. There is an alien presence. Howard Hunt was in such a position to know about the alien presence. So when he said that to me, he was speaking with authority. And when he said that on his deathbed, that LBJ and the people that were involved, I read into it that Howard Hunt was saying, "I'm serving my country."
To bring this around to your close friendship with Hunt, you knew him well.
Yeah.
And you knew his wife, Dorothy, and his family. How do you feel, knowing what you know, about Hunt having a role in something as treacherous as the JFK assassination?
I think Hunt, in his own mind, justified it. He was so wedded to that Bay of Pigs sellout and maybe the steps that JFK were taking. Howard Hunt was very conservative, very right-wing, Latin American activities that he was involved in, that so many people were killed. I could see him agreeing to that.
You could.
Only if he sensed there was justification in doing so.
I'd like to know how these presidents before and after JFK dealt with this group that were in control of the off-world technology, and how did they deal with the alien presence?
Eisenhower had, I think, the most knowledge about the alien presence at that time. Eisenhower was deep into this subject and may have even met with representatives of the alien intelligence. But Nixon was his vice president. Nixon was chairman of the 5412 committee, which oversaw covert activities. And I think Nixon had probably possessed 80% of the knowledge that Eisenhower had on the alien presence in the District 12. And Nixon, when he became president in 1968, the first thing he did was try to get control of the research project, the Majestic 12. In 1960, Nixon contacted Howard Hughes, early summer of 1960, and asked Howard Hughes to arrange the assassination of Castro without the government fingerprints on it. Howard Hughes agreed to do that. Howard Hughes had done a number of things for the government. He was one of the Nixon's secret donors. And Hughes delegated to Robert Mayhew, his right-hand man, M-A-H-E-U. He sought out the assistance of the mafia and organized crime. And the CIA was already on board, you might say. And so what happened was that Nixon was not elected in November. Kennedy was elected. And so this operation had been set up under Nixon's directive to Howard Hughes, continued on without JFK and his brother knowing about it. It was about a year into their administration that they found out about these training camps that were still going on that had been set up under Nixon's original authority. The point here is that if going into the Democratic National Committee and finding that Cuban government report on Kennedy's assassination, if it had traced Nixon being the originator of the Bay of Pigs debacle, the Cuban-American animosity towards JFK, that report, if it did exist, Nixon could be blamed publicly for he started a chain of events that ultimately led to the assassination because of the Bay of Pigs that involved all these Cuban Americans. And so it was also vital to the CIA to know if that Cuban government report existed there. There's a book on this called Watergate, The Hidden History, that goes into this secret desire on the part of Nixon and Helms to get that report that they thought it was a Democratic National Committee.
Why did they think that this document was there in the DNC?
Because Larry O'Brien was a former lobbyist for Howard Hughes in Washington. He may have got knowledge just being a lobbyist of what had gone on with Mayhew and Hughes, and could have used this in the campaign. But when Nixon became president in 1968, remember how JFK approached trying to get his knowledge of the Majestic 12's research project and the alien presence? He did that sort of gradually by these memorandums. Nixon did it differently. The day he inaugurated, he signed a National Security Decision Number 2, in which Nixon cut out the Defense Department, the State Department, and the CIA having major input into Vietnam and into the Cold War. And instead, he consolidated this with his National Security Council, with Henry Kissinger, and with his two closest aides, Alden and Ehrlichman. I read into this, to be honest, that based on what he knew as vice president under Eisenhower and what he had learned about the alien presence then, Nixon was intent, again, to get knowledge about the alien presence and what their intentions were. It was important for the president to know what was going on. I think that Nixon was set up through Watergate to fall because he was doing the same thing Kennedy was doing.
So he was trying to get control on this group that was handling the alien information.
He was pressing forward to find out about Majestic 12 and what it's doing with the alien presence.
He also wanted to assert presidential power over this breakaway Majestic 12 group that was researching the alien presence and technology. He wanted, like JFK wanted, to regain power over that program again.
He wanted the knowledge. I mean, he may have just continued the program with the same group, but he, as a co-equal, in other words, there's no reason the President of the United States should not be aware of these activities. Now, this leads into another activity, and that is that vast sums of money have gone to be used by Majestic 12 in dealing with the alien presence. Vast sums of money, starting with World War II, when the gold that was recovered by the Japanese was seized and sort of disappeared. Also, you have to wonder about all this money missing from the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve refuses to answer questions from members of Congress like Senator Sanders. He asked the head of the Federal Reserve where trillions of dollars went. The head of the Federal Reserve said, I won't answer you. They're not obligated to do it because they're not part of the government. They're independent. They're really a private bank is what they are. Don't forget, just the day before 9/11, the Secretary of Defense, Rumsfeld, held a press conference, and he said, I cannot account for $2.1 trillion that is missing from the Pentagon. And the next day was 9/11, and that headline sort of disappeared. There's two budgets. There's the black budget and the super black budget. The black budget is only like $90 billion, okay? That's authorized by Congress. They say, take this money and go off and do what you're supposed to do. We know you're using it for the right purposes. But the other, the super black budget, which is trillions of dollars, we have no idea how it's being handled. And I just think after over 60 years now, since 1947, when this all started with Majestic 12 and so forth, it's now time for an accounting for the space program.
Yes, a secret space program with no public transparency. We cover the black budget pretty closely. And you think that this whole question around the alien presence and the missing money is the most important issue facing society today.
Exactly. That's the bottom line. That's the most important issue.
At the end of my interview with Daniel List, he stressed that Caddy had not asked for any money or editing control to do the nearly three-hour Skype interview.
Douglas Caddy wasn't looking for big book deals or publicity. He just wanted to set the story right. He felt it was important for humanity and for our future to know the alien presence is real and that it was the reason for JFK's assassination. JFK's assassination lay in the secret of the alien presence that he was going to expose by giving it to the Soviet Union.
Have you or Douglas Caddy received any threats or intimidation since you started broadcasting the long interview on Dark Journalist the end of June 2015?
Well, it's very interesting. There were kind of unique technical difficulties around it. The reaction to it is that Caddy is such a serious figure, and the alien presence is such an important question, that we have not been able to put those two things together before. And when you add into it the impact of E. Howard Hunt, who is implicated very often in the assassination of JFK, and who at the end of his life gave a deathbed confession to his son, implicating members of the CIA in the assassination of JFK. And Caddy has gone on the record, and he's told us what his friend, E. Howard Hunt, who was a super spy, who worked for Presidents Eisenhower, JFK, and LBJ, he was the high-level CIA figure. For him to say this to Caddy, who knew nothing about the JFK assassination or the alien presence, I think it's historical. And I think for Caddy to come out and say it at the end of his life, I think it's a very brave thing to do. And what the implications are behind what Hunt said to him about the alien presence being the main reason for JFK's assassination.
Unraveling the mysteries, Linda.
Well, this is, I think, so significant. And jumping back to that Byrne memo that had tabs attached, and I went into great detail about this with Bob Wood in 2008, and now it's even more relevant in the context of the Caddy interview. There is a tab on the Byrne memo that says President's Eyes Only. Directive, remember, this is coming from the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, who is MJ-1 in Majestic 12, that is controlling all of the extraterrestrial research, retrieval technology, all of it. And it's never supposed to reach the public or media set up that way under Truman. But now we are at the time of where it's Kennedy leading up to the assassination and then what happens to Nixon. And in this Byrne memo, it says, directive regarding President's Eyes Only, all caps, in the likely event that the subject of unidentified flying objects or unconventional aerial weapons is a subject matter under discussion with the chief executive, National Security Council staff, department heads, the joint chiefs, and foreign representatives, a clarification of the question is in order to ascertain from them the reasons for bringing up the subject. It's as if nobody can bring up the subject but MJ-12, and if anybody else does, then they will be challenged and probably they would have some policy of ridicule or distance. They were trying to put distance between themselves and JFK. And then continuing, under no circumstance should any member, meaning of MJ-12, suggest or by inference that the subject is classified as a national security threat. This is the MJ-12 DCI talking with the other members. In the unlikely event that UFOs overtly display hostile intent towards the security of the United States as a group, and after consultation, should a full disclosure be made in accordance with the law as required. And Bob Wood said to me, you know, this Byrne memo really tells a fascinating story. JFK is beginning to ask too many questions. We can't allow this, the MJ-12ers are saying.
It's a great story, Linda, and good job. Up next, our old friend Jim Mars joins us.